check. Keep it alive, through these lines I write. I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope, so no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
A strategy, we didn't have bipartisan agreement, we didn't have American understanding of it, and we had instead a policy coup in this country, a coup, a policy coup. Some hard-nosed people took over the direction of American policy, and they never bothered to inform the rest of us. I went through the Pentagon 10 days after 9/11. I couldn't stay away from Mother Army. I went back there to see Don Rumsfeld. I'd worked for him as a White House fellow in the 1970s. All this is in the book. And I said, am I doing okay on CNN? He said, yeah, fine. He said, I'm thinking about it. He says, I read your book. And he said, this is a book that talks about the COSPA campaign. And he said, I just want to tell you, he said, nobody's going to tell us where or when we can bomb. Nobody. He said, I'm thinking of calling this a floating coalition. What do you think about that? I said, well, sir, thanks for reading my book. And, he said, thanks. That's all the time I've got. Really? And I went downstairs. I was leaving the Pentagon, and an officer from the Joint Staff called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess it's they don't know what to do about terrorism, and so they think, but they can attack states, and they want to look strong, and so I guess they think if they take down a state, it will intimidate the terrorists, and you know, it's like that old saying, he said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, then every problem has to be a nail. Well, I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office. It says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, seven countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I don't want to talk about it. And I sat on this information for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. I was so stunned by this, I couldn't begin to talk about it. And I couldn't believe it would really be true, but that's actually what happened. These people took control of the policy in the United States. And I realized then, it came back to me, a 1991 meeting I had with Paul Wolfowitz. You know, in 2001, he was Deputy Secretary of Defense, but in 1991, he was the Under Secretary of Defense for Policy. It's the number three position in the Pentagon. And I had gone to see him when I was a one-star general. I was commanding the National Training Center. I had met him one time. He said, if you ever get to Washington, come look me up. They always say that. Well, I was there in Washington. It was a Friday afternoon. I'd visited Colin Powell. He'd given me 5 minutes of his precious time and sent me on my way, and I was bored in the Pentagon, and I thought, I'll just go, well, who can I see? I think I'll see Wolfowitz. So I called, and up there, he was available. Scooter Libby came to the door. I met Scooter for the first time, and he brought me in, and I said to Paul, I said, and this is 1991, I said, Mr. Secretary, you must be pretty happy with the performance of the troops in Desert Storm. And he said, well, yeah, he said, but not really, he said, because the truth is we should have gotten rid of Saddam Hussein, and we didn't. And this was just after the Shia uprising in March of 91, which we had provoked, and then we kept our troops on the sidelines and didn't intervene. And he said, but one thing we did learn, he said, we learned that we can use our military in the region, in the Middle East, and the Soviets won't stop us. He said, and we've got about 5 or 10 years to clean up those old Soviet client regimes. Syria, Iran, Iraq, before the next great superpower comes on to challenge us. And it was like, you know, I'm coming out of the Mojave Desert. I've been training troops. I haven't been thinking geostrategy for some time. And suddenly a guy just sort of shoves this nugget at you. Well, you remember it. It was a pretty stunning thing. You mean the purpose of the military is to start wars and change governments. It's not to sort of deter conflict. We're going to invade countries. And I you know, my mind was spinning. And I put that aside. It was like a nugget that you hold on to. This country was taken over by a group of people with a policy coup. Wolfowitz and Cheney and Rumsfeld, and you could name a half dozen other collaborators from the Project for a New American Century. They wanted us to destabilize the Middle East, turn it upside down, make it under our control. It went back to those comments in 1991. Now, did anybody ever tell you that? Was there a national dialogue on this? Did senators and congressmen stand up and denounce this plan? Was there a full-fledged American debate on it? Absolutely not. And there still isn't. And that's why we're failing in Iraq. Because Iran and Syria know about the plan. All you have to do is read the Weekly Standard and listen to Bill Kristol, and he blabbermouths it all over the world. Richard Pearl the same way. They could hardly wait to finish Iraq so they could move into Syria. It was like a laydown. Oh, our legions are going to go in there. This wasn't what the American people voted George Bush into office. Well, they didn't actually vote him into office, but it wasn't what many of the people who... It wasn't what he campaigned on. He campaigned on a humble foreign policy, the most arrogant foreign policy in American history. He campaigned on no peacekeeping, no nation building, and here he is with Afghanistan and Iraq. It's astonishing. So the root of the problem is not how many troops are in Iraq. Please believe me. Don't be mad, if you're a Democrat, at your Democratic congressman because they can't reduce the troops and frustrate the president. That's not the issue. And if you're a Republican, don't be mad at the Democrats because they're fussing with the troops. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you're an American, you ought to be concerned about the strategy of the United States in this region. What is our aim? What is our purpose? Why are we there? Why are Americans dying in this region? That is the issue.
Well, thank you guys for joining us here on the Anti-Media Radio. This is your host, Nick Burnaby, with the Antimedia.org, hosted by UCY.tv, which is an awesome radio, internet radio station. You guys should bookmark it and check back all their other shows. I'm also joined in the studio by my co-host, Stevie Schwartz. How you doing, man?
Doing good, Nick. Good to be back after a couple of weeks calling in. And going to miss SM. You know, he helped out the show and gave it extra point of view. I hope people keep calling in like they have been. And that was just a great opening salvo. I mean, if you want to know what is going on, we're looking at the beginning of the last stages of this leadership's endgame. And we'll get into a little sound clip later about where that's headed for me and you if we don't stop it and how important it is to stop it. This won't be a typical show because, honestly, for me, things have really kind of hit ahead. I understand now what these people are trying to do, and now it's more important than ever for all of us to spread awareness and wake everybody up. If we had 100 or 200 million Americans awake, even 30% of the population, they couldn't do anything. There'd just be so many people that would be against them, and we got to wake these people up.
Yeah, man. Back to the opening clip there. That was General Wesley Clark, which is a 4-star American general that's now retired. And that was him speaking in 2003 at an event at some foundation. And he's on tape saying it in a few other interviews as well, basically the same thing. And it's in his book, which is called Winning Modern Wars. But, I mean, what we see there is basically the plans being laid down in at least, at the latest, in 2001, because that's when he was notified of it. Because you got to think, those plans are probably being formulated for years and years.
Oh, yeah.
But he literally just said that there were plans in 2001 to invade 7 different countries in the Middle East.
That was actually 1991 is when he got that memo.
No, the 1991 was when he was talking with Wolfowitz.
Oh, okay.
Earlier in the when he was earlier in his military or whatever, in his military career.
Right, right. And he'd worked with Rumsfeld in the 70s. And I think everybody kind of understands that Vietnam began the morphing of our policy. Our policy prior to that had always never been about empire. It was an empire of manifest destiny, but it wasn't, we're going to just invade a country and destabilize a region for geopolitical gains.
Well, we did before that, but it was mostly in our own backyards.
Right, and it was one country at a time.
It was here in Latin America, and which is just as horrible. Because we had, what do they call it, the Monroe Doctrine, I think it's called, which is basically this theory that anything in our sphere of influence, which is South America, Mexico, Latin America, we basically, the Monroe Doctrine basically says we have the right to go in and overthrow a country if we feel that it's trying to impede on our sphere of influence. Basically, corporate protection. It's just another form of corporate welfare for the ultra elite, for it to have these most times wars over resources and stuff like that.
Right. Yep. I mean, this is what it was. It was gunboat diplomacy was the main thing. And if we couldn't, you know, overtly change the attitude of a regime, we would go in there and overthrow them, and we've done it forever. But I believe that in 2001, Afghanistan represented a shift in our thinking where we're going to go in and actually start playing on the grand chessboard. For up to that point, it had been our own sphere. We'd been involved in World War II. We'd won it. And the Korean War was just more spillover from that. But, man, I swear that the leadership changed, and Eisenhower, he warned us about it. He warned us about it, and it's come true.
Yeah, man. We've been warned plenty of times. And we're getting some callers in, but we'll take some calls in a few minutes, guys, once we get through a few of these stories that we got to cover first.
Yep.
We've been warned plenty of times by these people. I mean, whether you want to look back at George Orwell or even at the Founding Fathers, way back in history, I mean, even in the Bible, there's references to this kind of stuff. About, you know, what it is people are going to do, but a lot of times people don't want to listen to it because they think it sounds so outlandish.
Right.
And because people have such this high opinion of government, And you got to remember, why in the world would anyone have a high opinion of government? Who in the world has a high opinion of government? I'll tell you who. People that are feeding on the corporate media, obviously, because right. if we want to take it as a given that the media more or less controls public opinion, and if a lot of people actually support these wars and support all the stuff that's going on with the government, then obviously the media isn't doing its job because it's not telling the truth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of where we have to come in, and the people have to kind of become the media.
And I've gotten into this debate with people where I'll see something, and I'm at the point now, Nick, and I think you're the same, where if you're out in a bar or something, you see the news, you almost want to just yell at it and go, that's such BS or whatever. And I've done it a few times, caught myself, and somebody around me go, what? You don't think that's what's really going on? I'm like, man, have you not seen a movie called Wang the Dog and then realized that it was made so that it was legal to propagandize you? And he's like, well, why would they do that? Why wouldn't the world be running the way that they say it is? To control you, man. It's just that simple, just to control you. And that's what it's about. Now, I think we're at that crossroads we've been talking about. Everybody's been talking about the singularity. We're at something even far worse than that. We're at a point now where we have people that don't need humans for the military. And that is far more dangerous than any singularity might be.
Yeah, that's one common theme that we've had on this song. I mean, on this show, is the ability for war to be waged now with just drones. And it literally has become a Terminator type of lifestyle for people in Pakistan, in Yemen, Afghanistan, where we're flying all these drones. And we know that they're being flown, a lot of them are being flown by people, but more and more of these drones are being flown by algorithms and computer programs and stuff. And that adds a very, very dangerous precedent for warfare. I mean, just imagine, it's not even war anymore. It's just terror. It's just basically state-sponsored terrorism when you wage these kind of tactics. Imagine drones flying over your house every day. And there's a chance that it's going to drop a bomb on one of your neighbor's houses or possibly even your house. I mean, that's terrorizing people.
And for it
to be completely out of human hands, it makes warfare such a more dangerous thing because it no longer requires troops. And think of the theme that Obama is talking about. Think of the theme that's been repeated over and over and over again in the media, the rhetoric. No troops on the ground. No troops on the ground.
Right.
Well, think about it. It's a good thing to not have troops on the ground, but it's a bad thing that instead of having troops, they're just going to be sending drones in. Because then there's no blood in the game. It's going to be so much easier for the president just to go wage war wherever he wants. All he's got to do is send in the drones.
And you know, it's a fitting quote because I remember that. You know, I love to bag on Hannity because he's so easy to. But he said, you know, if the president's doing one thing right, it's that he's not putting troops on the ground so that we're not going to have body bags come home. I understand that. I get it. We don't have to actually deal with the human costs of war anymore. But without human costs, there's no human consensus needed at all. The president did not need congressional approval to launch drones because guess what? They're not even part of the armed forces. These are CIA assets. They're not part of the military. So they can go drone all day and all night. And yeah, they pulled in some Air Force. Sure, they did. They used the Air Force to bomb Raqqa, where the ISIL has set up a base, which, by the way, how much theater is this that ISIL has set up a headquarters in a city and gave them a convenient bombing, you know, target? And they bombed a bunch of checkpoints. Again, convenient bombing target. This is theater. But real people are dying.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that I saw reports that showed that a lot of these guys got out of there before the bombs even came in. Like, it was obvious that someone knew it was coming.
Of course.
Because they got the hell out of the place. Yep. And only, 30 militants got killed. I mean, that's, think about the amount. I can't remember how many bombs they said they dropped, but it probably cost us $100 million, you know, to kill 30 guys. Yep. And who knows who these guys even are. You know, so, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind is the real human costs, besides just the militants, the the amount of civilians, because there were 10 civilians that died, and 3 of them were children. You know, so, I mean, that kind of thing, it's like, just because the military, or just because drones, or just because it's being dropped off a plane, you're still killing people, innocent kids. Three right. kids died in those bombings, and it's, if you look at the numbers, it's not very, those odds aren't very good. 30 militants, then 10 civilians, you're killing 25% civilians. Come on, that's ridiculous.
Yep, it's just
so. To me, man, it's just like one of these really big points about the drones and all that stuff. Drones are cool and all for personal use, all that stuff. But if we put drones in the hands of the government, that changes the equation, because then we're dealing with RoboCop, and then we're dealing with just drone patrols, and there's no more cop cars. There's just drones that fly. Those little quad rotor drones that fly across neighborhoods right. with an algorithm scanning everything and looking for, an algorithm detects suspicious behavior, and then it just sends a raid into your place to pick you up or to question right. you or whatever. I mean, this is stuff pretty that's going to. I mean, cops are bad enough.
Right.
Cops are bad enough as it is. I mean, we're going to go over a few stories later on where to talk about the whole police state.
And that's what Divergent comes into the play, the novel, about how they're narrowing it down for you, not them, for you.
And here's the thing about on the domestic front. If you see, ever since Ferguson and all this pressure got built upon the police accountability, police militarization, all that stuff. Because of that, there's been a bunch of cops that have been stepping forward. And in Florida, five cops stepped forward and turned in the chief of police because they had quotas for speeding tickets. You got mayors and all this stuff passing laws that put body cameras on all the cops and stuff. If they start replacing the policing with the drones and all that stuff.
Right.
I mean, I think at this point in time, we've made enough headway when it comes to police accountability that we're on the verge of getting a whistleblower breakthrough, like a bunch of whistleblowers.
Yeah.
Because we're already starting to see them start to spring up.
Mm-hmm. Right? And that's what it could lead to. You're right.
And that's what's going to happen. What makes me think that's going to happen is I was looking at this article about how the DHS is cycling through a bunch of employees, like people that work there just keep quitting.
Right.
And it's kind of, one is it's the public pressure, and the public starting to realize like what's really going on with the militarization of the police and the NSA, and then everyone's starting to question that stuff, the DHS, all that. There was a article that showed all those guys were taking off. So I have a feeling that that's probably a widespread theme across the government. They're starting to realize, yeah, I'm like, maybe we're doing the wrong thing. We need to get out of this, you know, because that's what seems to be happening. And if we can encourage that, make that easier for these people to step forward. I mean, it's only a matter of time before the police state crashes down on itself and then it's no longer viable. We need more whistleblowers to come forward, like Edward Snowden. There's been speculation that there's actually 3 NSA whistleblowers.
Yeah.
I know you've seen that, because some of the leaks are coming from stuff that Snowden supposedly
have. Because they understand, listen, the people running even these ABC agencies, they get it. They know that they're dispensable tools, and the time is coming where if the elites get their end game they want, those people are gone too. We all are, man. It's going to be maybe a few million people at tops that get some kind of protection in an underground base, and the rest are going to be left on the surface to fend for themselves when this giant war pops off they're trying to get going. I think that's a good segue, Nick, that, you know, this is what we're trying to avoid. Joshua Cook, who's a journalist at Ben Swan, did an interview with an ex-CIA contractor, and it really resonated with me because it kind of let me know what is the end game for these people? Why are they doing these things that make no sense to normal people? Because normal people don't have a bunker to go underground for 10 years. That's why it doesn't make sense. So I wanted to play this clip real quick, and it would kind of give you guys an idea. And this is by a former contractor to the CIA, Stephen D. Kelly. And I'll cue this up real quick.
We have a caller on the line also from 508 area code.
Yeah, let's let the caller chime in and then I'll try to cue this up.
What do you want
to
talk about?
What's up, Nick? It's actually Joe. But
hey, what's going on?
Yeah, actually, I heard that the CIA contractor you're talking about, and it's definitely some revealing stuff, and it really puts in perspective how everyone across the board, as you were talking about, even the police, they really need to just start speaking out, because it's not on a behalf of their jobs. There's just lives on the line completely across the board.
Right. Okay. Yeah, exactly right. It's people have got to understand that the cogs in the system, especially police and military, they've changed the operation for these people. They've completely reprogrammed them without them knowing it. Now, not all of them, most of them do know that they're being asked to do things they're not supposed to be asked to do. And until we, the people which control these people, tell them to stop, they're going to just keep taking orders. That's the whole problem with the chain of command.
Yeah, man. I mean, it all kind of goes back to this whole grander scheme and how Iraq, Syria all relate. And obviously, like General Wesley Clark said in the beginning clip, it's all about taking moves to counter Russia or to contain Russia. That's basically what he hinted at. He said it was to stop the spread of the... To basically pick up all the pieces from the failed Soviet states, okay? And unfortunately, what our government has done, they haven't really picked up the pieces. What they've done is turned them from failed Soviet states to failed American states. I mean, that's basically what they've done in Libya, what they've done in Iraq, what they've done in Afghanistan. And they have a track record of doing this, like, all over the place, you know, so... it's really not that surprising to me to see them do this, but what is surprising is that a general is willing to come forward and speak about it. And if there's one general, there's got to be another and another,
mm-hmm.
and there's got to be more people that are going to step forward, like Snowden, and there's going to be more cops. I mean, this is what's going to happen. This is when we're going to know that, okay, it's actually happening, like, the good side is winning, right? But then what we have to keep in mind is that at that point, if you look at it, From a military perspective, first of all, because it's already happening, it's the drone army, the drone war, the RoboCop, and all that stuff. That's horrible because you don't even actually need people to do that. You could run it all on computers, so they don't need an army. They don't need to raise a bunch of people. And just like we hear the rhetoric from Obama, everybody knows that nobody wants to have boots on the ground in Iraq. Nobody. That would be the most unpopular thing anyone could ever do with the American public. But to just send drones in is okay. But unfortunately, on the other side of the drone is a bunch of real human lives that are being a lot of times just murdered because they're innocent people, you know, just
Absolutely.
Like these recent the strikes that we just did in Syria, we've already killed innocents. I mean, it's just so far out of the realm of things that we want to do as a free society. I mean, this is not what we're doing is not freedom. And because another, let's say ISIS is depriving people of their freedom, that would be okay to go and stop if you were a completely scotch-free country, right? If you didn't have any sins on your own country, if you had never done any of that stuff. So I guess we don't really have the moral authority to go over to these countries and tell them to not let people free when we have the largest prison population in the world. You know what I mean? So, I mean, how can we do that and say these people are depriving people of freedom when we are the largest deprivers? You know, it just doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. I got that thing queued up now, so we'll see if it comes through here.
All right, let's do it.
You know, for over a year now to do airstrikes in Syria, you know, he said, look, I don't really care. It was almost like he said, I don't really care if, you know, a Stinger missile falls in the wrong hands, and a fighter, you know, or a commercial jet gets, you know, blown up in the sky. Of course, you know, we see the capabilities of what can be done, you know, in the Ukraine as far as commercial airlines. But, you know, it seems like there's this flippant attitude of, you know, these very dangerous weapons falling in the wrong hands. Of course, they're in the hands of ISIS, you know, this radical militant group. You know, is there concern in the CIA community and the intelligence community of blowback?
Well, first of all, I am not connected to these people anymore in any shape or form. I've basically gone against everything that they stand for. Now, that's not to say that there aren't people in there that are somewhat righteous and have good intentions. However, with respect to your concept of blowback, especially with your reference to John McCain, as I said earlier, no, this is suicide. These people want blowback. This is what they anticipate. This is why they are doing this. They want nuclear war. They want missiles flying everywhere. They will actually go so far as to allow nuclear missiles, ballistic missiles from China or Russia to strike the U.S. without using our superior technology to defeat those, because they want to kill 6.5 billion people, and that includes at least 300 million Americans. So they don't care. This is all part of the plan. Everything that they're doing is to schedule. This is the new world order. This is what they do. They want to depopulate the world at this time, and especially when you consider that the dollar has just hit rock bottom. They've already stolen all the money. There's no more money left to steal. They're picking the gold out of the teeth right now. They've already put all the money into their bunkers underground. They're fully stocked. They're ready to go. They're can't wait to move into those bunkers, and this is why people like John McCain are so anxious to push the button and launch the war, because they want to retire in those nice underground bunkers with all those slaves and all that wonderful stuff that they've stolen over the last 100 years.
So that's, I mean, you want to know what it is, that's in a nutshell right there. Why are they doing these things? Why are people allowing these things to happen? Well, the chain of command allows for it, and there's built-in safeguards so that things are not really questioned. Now, what is the public's role now? Because they just went to war without us, and nobody said anything. So if they go to war with Iran, will anybody say anything? Now, how about Russia? Now, how about China? Where will it make it so that it's really painful? How many people will have to die in an ICBM attack things change?
That guy was like a former CIA contractor.
He is, and
he claims to be a former CIA contractor, and he was on being interviewed by someone, one of Ben Swan's people on the radio show.
You know,
and I mean, he has some stuff to say.
These Blackwater guys now, Nick, they're smarter than the average bear. Most of them were probably officer, if not officers, officer material in the military, and they're up there, man, and they know what's up. They know what the strategy is. They know that where they're being placed in the Middle East, there's no coming out of there, because if it spreads into World War III, that's a kill zone in there. And these guys really, it seems to me, these whistleblowers, Nick, they don't care anymore, because there's no point for fear anymore. There's either we change the system, and some people may have to be martyrs to change the system, or we let these people do what they've been doing, continue to do it, and then we're all going to pay. We're all going to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the, who knows if it's a real Einstein quote or not, but it makes total sense when he says, I don't know what World War III will be fought with, but I know World War IV will be fought with sticks.
Right, stones. Sticks and stones.
So, I mean, it's true, because we're in a point in time in history, for the first time in our known history, that we can actually destroy the world with these weapons that we have, the entire world, you know. And it's not really something to be taken lightly when our government is openly pushing Russia and all these guys, Iran and, of course, China, into these corners. We're trying to contain them and stuff, just like Wesley Clark said was the plan from the beginning. For them to be doing that with our money, knowing that one day this could lead to our own destruction, to World War III, it's just unthinkable, man. And I just, I just don't know how many people that think that it's a good idea that we're going over there and bombing in Syria. I just don't know how many people think that that's a good idea, man. I just don't get it.
Well, but, people don't understand. They do not understand the mentality of the people that are at the top. These people don't, they, like he said, man, they just don't care because they're all prepared. You know, the only reason nothing started off yet is because they haven't been able to get enough public support to start a huge war that would pretty much leave them as the only survivors with technology. I mean, could you imagine what a global world war would do? It'd knock everyone back to the dark ages, and whoever's left is going to have absolutely zero way to resist whatever they come out of the bunkers with, and who knows what they got buried in there. I mean, he laid the plan out. Stop the plan or we're all going to eat it.
Well, we all know what we all know what's possible, and that right. What's possible is that it's drones, massive right. Drones. I mean, it's like the whole Star Wars thing coming to real life where it's just this drone army.
Exactly, a clone army and a drone army and a hapless population that's completely asleep. And it's just our job to find those points of light and they actually make other people wake up, you know? I know the caller's still on the line. Anything you wanted to add?
No, I completely agree with you. You know, lives are definitely on the line, and people just need to come to the realization that, you know, everything in the world's not always going to be, you know, that can't happen, this can't happen. It damn well can, and it's on its way to happening. And the only thing that's going to stop that is if people stand up and say they're tired of it. We don't want this anymore. We don't support your wars of aggression. And if it wasn't for, in my mind, if it wasn't for Putin trying to avoid this war as much as he has, we'd probably already be in it.
Yeah, man. And the unfortunate thing, the worst part of it all is that because of what we're doing in Syria and Ukraine, it's forcing Putin's hand to go in there and prop these regimes up. Because if not, they would have already fallen. You know, so what it turns into right away, and don't get me wrong, I think Russia is really the only, Russia and finally China is the, are the only counterbalances to yep. U.S. hegemony, basically.
And China's not, because China's been neutered by our economy, basically.
I mean, yeah.
Their economy.
We've tied China to our backs, right. I think, in a way. Because of all of the shared debt and all that stuff that they have between us and them and all that, and all the trade and all that stuff. We basically tied China to our back, so it kind of picks their feet up off the ground. While at the same time, you got to keep in mind that China's never been an imperialist power. I mean, look back in Chinese history, and there's not been very many times where they've tried to expand outside of their borders. You know, China never invaded the Middle East, you know what I'm saying? They never invaded Russia. I mean, the only time that there was a huge empire out there was the Mongolian and the Russian Empire.
Right.
And so obviously Putin is a product of the Russian Empire.
Yep.
He's old KGB. He's got his own plans for the region, and he doesn't want the U.S. Yep. stepping on his plans.
And
now here's the thing.
Yeah.
It makes it. Now, do I think Putin's a good guy? No. But do I think he's the one that actually is preventing it from falling even further into a further a horrible situation? Yes.
He's the finest Russian leader they've had, you know, for as long as I can remember, maybe since the Tsar regime, the empire, the Russian empire. So, you know, you had a horrible guy like Lenin and then Stalin that followed him, and they distorted Marx, and Putin's trying to get back to an orthodoxy. He's a severe nationalist. He goes against the globalist plans because they don't want countries. They want a human slave race microchip so that they can go around the world on Gulfstream G6s. That's their whole wet dream. And this guy's standing in the way. He has the most oil in the world, the most usable oil in the world, and guess what else? The entire of Siberia is stockpiled with ICBMs. So, man, if they want to pick somebody to screw around with and get things started, they pick the right guy. But that goes into their plan. And see, that's where I've started to have a whole consciousness shift, is that these guys want to play because they play to lose, because when they lose, they win, because we're all gone. That's where I'm starting to see things a little differently.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are like the guy in the CIA contractor guy was saying. It's like they're doing these things to make blowback. They know that blowback. It's like, it's not like they're that dumb where it's like they didn't see the blowback coming.
They want
it. It's at a point where their strategy is they want the blowback so that they can just keep increasing the thing.
Exactly. They keep escalating.
And the more that they can increase the arms that they can ship into Syria, they're going to arm these rebels to the teeth, and then those rebels are going to go knock out Assad. That's the whole plan. I mean, you got to remember, ISIS was created because we were funding ISIS to overthrow Assad. Why are we bombing ISIS? Because ISIS got out of control. They started threatening oil fields in Iraq. And when they did that, all of a sudden there was a humanitarian crisis that we all of a sudden wanted to take notice of. And we sent the bombs in.
Yes.
We sent the drones in. You know, and then they expanded it because nobody really protested it. Nobody really opposed it. At least the thing was, this is the problem. The media, what the media created was a false consensus. They started throwing these polls around. Oh, 60% of people believe that the war is a good idea.
Right.
It's like 60% of who? Who did you poll?
Nobody.
Because if you're polling landline phones, you're obviously polling people that are like over 50, and those are all the same people that watch your show.
Do you know what?
So you're telling people 60% of people approve of bombing them.
Right.
So the people are like, oh, well, I'm part of that 60%. You know, and that's how the brainwashing works. It's like a preeminence that they carry with it. That's why it works so well.
I mean, Gallup is this. It's a giant hub of servers that make robocalls all day to landlines where a female voice tells you to press buttons one or two for yes or no. And that's the whole poll. There's no gray areas in between. And all it does nothing, man. It's like saying the mass media or the corporate media still have pull. They don't. No. They have pull with, are you going to send 68-year-olds to fight?
Media did was it made a false consensus, and it quelled all of the anybody's opposition. They quelled it like that by saying, "Oh, well, too bad. Everyone already supports it," you know. And that's kind of the attitude that they took with it. But unfortunately, that's a false consensus because those polls are flawed. You know, the people over 50; those are the people over 50. They're not even contributing anymore. A lot of them aren't even working. You know, they shouldn't be sending the young people that are supposed to be paying their bills as they get older off to go die in these wars. Or even worse, not sending the young people, just sending the drones and then getting the terrorists coming back here and actually having real blowback that bombs places in the country because of all of the intervention and all the drones that we're sending. Dude, think about having a drone flying over your head every day.
Yep.
Do you not think that 90-95% of the population that had a drone, armed drone, flying above their head every day would not have PTSD?
Yeah, Gaza's in a permanent PTSD state. I mean, you have drones all day. You hear that constant whirring buzzing. I mean, I think one of the big things that was going to come out, you know, with some of the stories coming out were about the new drones coming out was that they're basically insect-sized. And we're at the point now where people knew and we had insect drones, they'd be swatting mosquitoes all day, right? So we're kind of like at the Orwellian era. Now, how do we change that into something that's going to be a golden age, not the dark ages they want? You know, we've got a co-op. We've got to have a new generation of hackers that can turn these machines around on these dudes. What we need is when the drone goes out, it goes back in and bombs the base. It's hacked. It's possible. It's coming. And these guys aren't going to be able to stop it. And that's the whole microchip agenda, dude. They're scared shitless because there's a whole generation of people that can turn the toys around on them. And they don't live in this country.
And a lot of them, do live here, though.
And some of them do.
I just want to touch upon the false consensus that you were speaking about. Ever since, you know, he started the war and they were spouting that on the news, my first thought was, yeah, they totally, that's not true, because the only way that would be true is if they faked it, because they failed so horribly at trying to pitch the Syrian war the first time that no one was going down for that. And them admitting it is what, you know, ultimately failed in their plan to commit those. And also on the morality of everything, which surprises me the most, how people buy into these humanitarian wars when most of the actions we take are very unhumanitarian. And that's the whole reason I, you know, did my waterboard video and waterboarded myself, to make the point that these people claim to be the moral fortitude and standard of the world, yet they're doing these type of torture tactics to people and claim, well, it's okay because they're beheading people. And a lot of people just miss the point completely. But it's these people don't have no, they don't have any moral fortitude, and they sure as hell don't care about you or anyone else for that matter.
I don't, honestly, man, if you think these people have allegiance to you because you share a country with them, they will laugh all the way to your execution when it comes time for it, man. Because this is all a power grab. It's all just a big game about power. And it's just, it's got to be stopped. The suppression's got to be overwhelmed by enough people knowing. You know, if enough people, so many people know, now know about cannabis, that cannabis will be legalized. And not the way that Philip Morris and Monsanto wanted it with their patenting of their shit gene clones. But now medicinally, children with cancer will be cured. And that is the power of the internet and the power of the consciousness shift.
Yeah, and what we need to do is attach a message to cannabis, because it's going everywhere. It's getting huge. The polling, I know you don't like the polling numbers, but the polling numbers show that it's huge. But I think it is big to think of it that way, about how it is spreading, you know, because I think we are making positive strides, and I think the media is only able to keep up this narrative, they obviously had like a 1 month blitzkrieg of information. And I just saw something on a CNN clip a couple days ago where they were trying to show how horrible ISIS was on CNN. And it was funny because everything they described was kind of similar to the US government as well, because they were like, well, ISIS is bad because once they take over an area, they take over the food, they take over the water, they take over the electricity. And, I mean, our government already does that.
Yeah.
And they're saying, okay, this is why ISIS is bad.
Right.
And then they're like, okay, and then also what they do is they have a strict Sharia law where if you get caught drinking or smoking, there's harsh punishments. And I was like, well, that's kind of like here too, because if you get caught drinking or smoking a joint, there are harsh punishments. You know, I mean, if they want to talk about how they're ruling through religious means and extreme religious means by comparing it to getting people in trouble for drinking and smoking, that's a horrible comparison, because our government does the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I sit there and look at this clip on CNN and I just wonder to myself, how many people are watching this and actually buying this garbage? Because it's like completely, completely just out in the open now. And if you look at the median numbers of people that watch TV, something like people in there, not TV in general, TV news, MSNBC, CNN, yep, Fox News, it's like between 50 and 60 years old. The O'Reilly factor, the median age is 72 years old.
And they barely matter. They barely matter. And let me tell you why. With the way that the economy is changing and the way that you have to have technology down pat now, they're just not going to be able to do the jobs that are needed. And they're going to lose their political influence when they stop paying taxes. Simple as that. And they're going to pop things off before that happens. They know that our generation, Nick, doesn't watch TV. And children hate it. I mean, I've seen my kids, and they want a laptop. They want a tablet. If the TV's on, they watch it bored. They're like, this isn't stimulating to me. I can't split the screen and do two things at one time. Blah, 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 blah. Those days are gone. The manipulation generation, the baby boomers' babies, those guys they lost that window, man. And they're desperate now. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing these wars pop off because their whole goal of world domination, these Zionist people, whatever you want to call them, dude, whoever these people are at the top, their window shut, dude, and now all they have left is to throw a big baseball through a glass window. And what does that make? Huge mess. So that's all they got left, dude.
It's a mess that you and me and Joe we're all gonna have to clean it up. I mean, yep. That's basically we're the custodians of this fallen empire, more or less. Because I mean, if you look at it, if you look at it from a historical perspective, cyclical, and how history is cyclical, time frames and stuff like that. We outlived our fiat currency by a lot,
right?
Already, our empire is coming to its. I mean, at a historical standpoint, I mean, our empire is already coming to its. It's already been through its peak. It's right. already on the down.
General Clark said it in the soundbite. He said, we're going to lose our window of being a superpower. And that window's closed, man. If you think that we're still the lone superpower, then why are we not attacking whoever we want? Why are we still playing proxy war games? Why are we still using other countries' intelligence agencies to attack our own assets to make us do stupid shit? It's obvious that the people that had that opportunity to be able to do what the Nazis wanted to do all the wrong way, they're still there. Their descendants are still there. And they're still making our policy, and our policy did get hijacked.
And you know the funniest part is they're still making all the same mistakes.
They are. They're still, because they're arrogant, man. They think they're cut from a better cloth. They're superior genetic makeup, whatever you want to call it, that they're rich because their forebears had a better head on their shoulders. The truth is, man, that the people are the sheeple because they're docile, they're peaceful, and like most cops pretty much would tell you, there are three. There's the sheep, there's the wolves, and the sheep herders. But you know what? It's time for everybody to start herding themselves away from the wolves. It's all we got to do. We don't need sheep herders. Sheep herders open up things like government, open up things like big business. We got to get back to thinking for yourself.
We need to cut that whole thing out of the equation, right? I mean, we don't want to fall into the same trap over and over, the same empire cycle, where at first it's at first it's freedom and liberty, and then it's empire, and then it's tyranny, and then it's police state. I mean, it's over and over again. And if you look at us, obviously we're in a police state, where our currency, our economy, everything is on the downturn. Our population is kind of leveled out. These are all the symptoms of a dying empire, man.
Yep.
And so no matter what happens, I guess, one way or another, these people, whoever's running the show, they're going to bring themselves down just like every other empire brought itself down. It was never really so much that the empire got its ass kicked by another empire. It was more or less the empire got so out of touch that it just fell apart on its own.
Right.
You know, and that's what always happens. And I think that's what's going to happen again. Like, I honestly think these guys are trying to start up all these wars and stuff,
yeah,
just to try to keep the jig, just to keep the show going just a little longer. But
so they can reset it.
No matter what, it's inevitable that sooner or later the show is up and, mm-hmm, you know, it falls apart.
Yes.
And then are we going to recreate another bogus or another flawed society or civilization,
no,
where we end up having the same exact problem where it turns into an oligarchy?
Right.
Because if you look at any ideology of government, right, that has been used in the real world. So let's say democracy, socialism, republicanism,
communism,
you know, capitalism.
Right. But we've never tried the one we always love.
They've all ended the same way. Oligarchy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So obviously there's some fundamental part of that equation that for all these years and all these 5,000, 10,000 years of civilization, we've missed that fundamental point. And at some point, I think, like you said, is cutting those parts out where we don't fall subject to those parts anymore. And I think more or less at the root of it, it's how do we neutralize the wolves?
Right. I mean,
how do you neutralize the wolves? So
we
in any flock, like you said,
them, right?
You got the saying, the cop saying is there's the sheep, which is the public. There's the sheepdog.
Right.
The sheepdog, which
the
is the one that protects the herd.
Right.
And then you have the wolf.
Right.
Right. So without the wolf, we wouldn't even need the sheepdog,
right,
to protect the flock. So what we need to do is figure out ways to neutralize these means of control, basically, is what it is.
And I think we're
everything
there.
Everything in society, there's been all these political ideas, all these economic ideas, all this crap. Everyone has their own version of how it should be done. A bunch of people have tried their ways out in countries that have all failed. And it comes down to this. We can't repeat those mistakes. We've got to come up with something new.
Well, yeah.
And as the empire crumbles, I don't know when it's going to happen. I, by all looks of things, in 5 years, who knows? It could be 50 years. You know how long the Roman Empire dragged itself out? I mean, we're talking about 100 years, maybe.
But once the cancer sets in, you got
to sooner or later, we got to come. Yeah. We have to overcome this way of thinking, right, which leads us into this rise and fall of the empire.
Right.
And the thing is that empires, there's always one dominant empire, and then there's a secondary empire that comes up and bites at its heels, and this is how the cycle works. The thing that always happens is people end up dying, man. People end up getting killed, mostly for resources,
right,
and stuff like that, because that's what increases your empire, is increasing resources.
Right.
They raped North and South America to try to get all the gold and silver, and they did get a lot of it. You know, that's what they do.
Right.
We're talking about the Spanish Empire back
in the day.
And
these are generations back.
We're doing the same thing, except now we're not pillaging for gold and silver as much. We probably still are.
Right.
But we're pillaging for oil to keep up this petrodollar system.
But we are still going for gold and silver. Gold and silver are always going to be used as monetary systems because of their inherent value outside of just looking pretty. They have so many real applicable uses.
Commercial uses.
Commercial, but spiritual uses too as well. And that's something we can get into later. But here's the thing, man. Peter Joseph, he did a lot of some great work with some of these Zeitgeist series. And he said, we have the ability now to have an AI conduit running a resource-based inventory system of the world's resources and distributing them equitably, right? So that we would all have enough. No one would starve. Because right now we have carrying capacity for 13 billion. So we make almost double what we need.
Yeah, man, it's a big question. It's a big question because for me, like, I've never really studied much on the resource-based economy and stuff. I'm more of agnostic when it comes to economics. But I mean, here's the question is being born on this earth, considering that the earth is one giant, one thing, it's one big thing, right?
Gaia.
So I mean, wouldn't it kind of mean that we all kind of are in effect participating in it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And we're kind of by association, being born on the earth, you are part of it. So in a way, I think that kind of does entitle you to kind of what the earth is made out of, which I guess that's kind of what the resource-based economy is kind of.
Well, what it'll do is it's gonna pretty much triangulate resources in three ways. One, what's sustainable forever? Food, stuff we can always regrow, stuff that runs off the sun, stuff that we can plant, stuff that we can maintain a crop of and a supply of. Two, what doesn't? Diamonds, gold, silver. What's hard? What's not made anymore? What's only made by natural processes and takes forever? Three, what's crafted? What is a human being's ingenuity allowing you to take a raw material and make it even better than it was? Now, everybody should be entitled to as much as they might need of the first category, and that's resource-based economy. Nobody should starve. Nobody should go thirsty. Everybody should have clothing and a place to live. And everybody should be mandatorily required to educate themselves because we don't have room for dummies.
Well, I mean, I agree with at least one portion of that. In that, I think that running a system that way would lead to a lot more peace because in an empire, it's always a grab for resources. Keep the empire going. And I mean, back to this whole war in Syria stuff, we're launching a campaign or a rally or a march, whatever anybody wants to do, anyone listening that wants to organize one in your city. This is the first of this coming out, basically. We announced it maybe an hour ago or so on the Anti-Media page, but it's #NotMyWar. And basically, it's an anti-war protest against all wars, man. Because we have to keep in mind that ISIS isn't the only bad guy.
They've been monitoring the school for 18 months.
What's that? I don't know where that came from.
Well, they've been monitoring the school, man. So that'll be the end of the show. And cue the music.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in.
Guys, can you hear me?
Thanks for listening. Alberto, what's up? You want to say something? Hurry up. We only got a
I'll give them to the point. Saturday, Global Citizen Day. If there's anything, activities available, to please let us know on the internet, please. Yo, here we go. Global Power Stereo. Try to get something as possible. Bye.